Hello and welcome to the Buzzcast. I'm John Adams.
And I'm Andrew James.
And here in our 10th episode, we'll be answering some questions on managing your RAW files, how to store your camera batteries when travelling, and a great Photovator tip to spur you into action on chilly winter mornings. But before we get into all of that, Andrew.
Here's one, John, that I think that we can all relate to. I know I can. And it could descend into a bit of a rant, this one. In fact, I think I've written a rant more or less on this subject in the past on PhotoBuzz. And that is it getting harder, or should it be as hard to travel with your photography kit as it feels like it's getting these days?
You're talking air travel here.
Yes, air travel on a blinking aeroplane going to another country,
yeah,
with your camera or cameras and your lenses, particularly wildlife lenses. We've got to get a big lens, and you've got weight restrictions, you've got size restrictions. None of them are the same. It gets confusing. Maybe you're on two or three flights in order to get where you need to be, but on flight one, you've got one size and one weight. On flight two, you've got another size, another weight. And then flight three, you've got it's something even smaller. I don't know. It just drives me up the wall.
Yeah, I can understand why. Because, particularly on things like if you're going to internal African flights, you've got your big carrier, then you've got your small carrier, and they want soft bags. There's all kind of restrictions placed upon you and on your weight. And when you think about hand luggage or cabin luggage in general, that's where you've got to put your kind of your liquids, your toiletries, all of those kind of
bits. I can't bother. I don't have any of those things. There's no room left for any of those.
Well, I got into a habit when I was doing lots of foreign travel with cameras too. There was the spare pair of pants. There was a spare T-shirt in case they lost my main bag. And it had the shooting essentials. So I had effectively some sort of survival kit that I could get by with.
Wouldn't your spare pair of underpants be treated as some sort of toxic material? not allowed through.
That's only on the way back, and they're welcome to keep them. But on the way out, they would have been clean. So,
oh, glad we could clear that up, because I was worried.
Yes, if that wasn't enough detail for you.
Okay, so the situation that I find quite often is this: is the problem of the changes in sizes or weight allowances. So effectively, you then have to work. So you have to go, right, the smallest bag or the weight I'm allowed is on that flight, so everything has to scale back from there. Now, I know that there are things that you can put in your hold luggage. For example, you could put in battery chargers and bits and pieces. Not batteries. Batteries should be in your hand luggage.
Yeah, lithium ions have to be hand baggage.
But the problem with this is, you know, now and again, your hold luggage doesn't turn up at the destination. So you arrive somewhere to take photographs, and you've put your battery charger in your hold luggage because you can't fit it in your cabin luggage. So I'd rather they standardized everything, so you knew that it was this weight and this dimension for every flight that you went on. Okay, but then potentially they could allow people to buy an extra weight for the hold luggage. Now, I know maybe everyone's going to do that, or maybe they make that something that if you are carrying specifically expensive and fragile equipment like photography, like cameras or videography or whatever, again, you pay a video or photo surcharge. I mean, there has to be some kind of creative thinking around this that would improve the situation. Maybe it makes a few bucks extra for the hard hit travel industry, poor so-and-so such as they are. I mean, having a terrible time of it, obviously. But at least if we know where we are, then we can work around that. But it's such a mess. And I know before you say it, in fact, go on, just say it, you could always scale down the size of your camera equipment.
Well, I think that's the only answer. What I was going to say is be thankful you're not a musician. Because if you've got to carry something like a cello, the only option you have is to buy another seat. So you have to get another ticket for a seat.
I think everyone's thankful I'm not a musician.
At least not a cellist.
And I could sing in order to, or try and play a cello now if you want me to show you the reasons why everyone's thankful.
It won't be necessary. No, I mean, I've managed to get by with carrying a 12-string guitar all around the Middle East at one stage, and I didn't have to pay extra for it. But that was a while ago, and now things have changed, and airlines want every ounce of money they can get from people.
So come on, you haven't argued against my point. You know, is there a reason why they shouldn't be doing exactly what I'm telling them to do? I mean, I am right, aren't I?
Well, I think you are, because it seems ridiculous. I mean, there's a certain allowance for hand luggage or for cabin baggage. And What it used to be across the board was it was a 22-inch carry-on and it would have a certain weight of, say, 10 kilos. Now, you can get quite a lot of camera kit into a 22-inch carry-on. The 10 kilos was the problem. So we'd all go over that, but we'd stick to the size of the bags. Nowadays, I think because of the way planes are designed, you can't actually get, you know, not every passenger could have a 22-inch carry-on. So if everyone brought what they were allowed to bring, you'd have a problem because it simply wouldn't fit. And then they'd be saying, you've got to put that in the hold. So all that stuff in your cabin baggage has got to be hold-worthy as well. So yes, there isn't any standardised pattern. It gets ridiculous. So I don't know what the answer is. I guess what we have to do is look at all the potential connections on a flight. So if you've got three flights to get to somewhere, you've got to look at the minimum standard.
Well, that's what I do. There,
which might be sort of a 5 kilo...
But it's not good enough. That's my point. It's not enough. I can't get everything I need into a bag weighing 5 kilos. I put a 1DX in, and that's pretty much my weight limit
gone.
Stick a 300 or a 400 in, God forbid, and then I'm double over potentially. So okay, I know that as photographers we're slightly different from the rest of the general public. We're far more important than everybody else. But the point is we're only trying to enjoy our hobby or make a decent, fair, honest living, governor, aren't we?
I was going to say that flight cases may be the answer, but they're actually not, because flight cases aren't generally flight safe. I'm reminded of a horrendous job I once did, which was out in Marrakesh, and I took out with me, it was a video job, there were video cameras, which was a broadcast quality camera, and a small edit suite as well. And that was all in flight cases, and as we stood waiting by the baggage conveyor belt, the carousel, for it to appear, a small child came out riding the camera case. So he came through the flappy doors where the baggage carousel turns up. The flight case was open, slightly adrift, and had a small child sitting on it laughing away. And my face sort of dropped, thinking, I'm out here for 2 weeks to do this particular job. Is everything broken? And actually, the camera was broken. The edit suite survived, but the camera, the viewfinder, was snapped off.
Oh, really?
And we had to fix it with some... went into a local shop and got some araldite and managed to glue the viewfinder back on. That was a great job for the hire company.
Oh, yeah. That's probably where that idiot got the idea of those stupid trunky things that they put kids on and then pull them around the blinking airport with.
Yeah, but you don't expect the child of probably an employee at the airport to be riding your very sensitive, fragile, stickered baggage. But yeah, there you go, Marrakesh. What a wonderful place.
Well, yeah, well, funny enough, that is one of the places where my luggage hasn't turned up on one particular occasion, just to prove my point from earlier. Look, I don't know. I think it's just one of those frustrating things, and I just wish that they would standardise it. That's all I'm asking for. I don't want them to standardise it at 2 kilograms, obviously, in a 10x8-inch size sort of something to get your packed lunch into bag. But I do want them to standardise it and talk to each other across the travel industry world so that it's reasonable. Maybe there's a standardised for long-haul flights and a standardisation for shorter flights. I get that there may be a difference in terms of storage allowance. But I mean, I was on a transcontinental flight not that long ago on a very well-known airline that may be British or may not be British, but is British, but it sort of isn't, but is. You may know what I'm talking about. Anyway, and it was proper big aircraft, and the luggage compartment was ridiculously small. I didn't actually have that big a bag with me, but I could barely get it in, and I was appalled by when I asked about it to the air steward. He was actually quite rude to me, and he said put it under your feet, and I said I've just paid nearly £1,500 for this flight, mate.
I wonder what you're going to say then.
and then his answer was just take the stuff out of the bag. But you have to take the stuff. I mean, I'm like, I've got two cameras and four or five lenses. I mean, it just gets crazy, I think. And it adds to the stress so much.
Yeah.
There's enough stress with travel. And I understand why you have to do all the checks because of the safety. That's, that's in everybody's interests. Nobody argues about that stuff. But I'm just desperate for some kind of sensible, fair, reasonable standardization that would make life easier. Probably not just for photographers, but for people with hobbies that have some kind of similarity in terms of the issue of carrying expensive equipment.
As I mentioned before, the easiest parallel to draw is one with musicians who have to travel with expensive kit that they don't really want to put in the hold because we've all looked out the window and we've seen how baggage is handled sometimes, and the more fragile stickers and the more sort of if you've got industrial strength flight cases involved, that's just seen as a challenge by some baggage handlers to break whatever the contents are.
Well, I think that's probably why I've always said to everybody that if you're going to be a traveling musician, learn the penny whistle.
Well, but don't put it in a back pocket and sit down.
Oh, yeah, I hadn't thought of that.
Mm. Or harmonica. Harmonica players have it easy.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I love a good harmonica.
I'm almost tempted to get one out, but perhaps we should leave that for another Buzzcast. Oh, no, hang on.
Now it's time for Q&A. And, John, I've got a question here that is right up your street. For raw file management, some people say Lightroom, I think it is, might be, is the best option, while others say that Bridge is better. What do you recommend?
Oh, you mean you as me or you as in PhotoBuzz? Is this what we recommend or what I recommend?
No, I said you. I don't yet see you as the entity that is PhotoBuzz.
You don't mean a royal you. Well, I think we may disagree on this. So the recommendation, I think that Bridge is a comprehensive package, and the reason I prefer Bridge to Lightroom for file management is because it's a genuine, true file browser, whereas Lightroom isn't a true file browser. What I mean by that is, with Bridge, I can put in a CD of images or a DVD of images or an external hard drive that someone's lent me for an afternoon to get. I can put anything in and I can see what pictures are on there and I can access them and load them directly into Adobe Camera Raw from Photoshop. I can see what I'm looking at and I can get to them. If I use Lightroom, I can't do any of that because I'd first have to import them all. So they're kind of tagged and linked in the Lightroom library. That, for me, is why I use Bridge rather than Lightroom as my kind of file management system.
Yeah, no, I totally understand that. And actually, what I would say is, I don't think we're going to disagree that much, because actually I think both Bridge and Lightroom are really good programs. It very much depends on what your specific needs are. And I do understand how with Lightroom, the idea or the concept of actually importing, you're not importing the images, but you're importing not even a copy, but a shadow. You're linking, aren't you? You have to say
it's over here and that this is where you can find it, and then it will import the thumbnails.
Yes.
Or create the thumbnails based on that data.
The reason that I actually, and I have used Bridge and I still use Bridge from time to time, but why I moved on to Lightroom was just I felt that when you are sorting through, and it's more about the file management specifics, i.e. keywording and rating, I find Lightroom's a little bit slicker for me. I know you can rate in Bridge, I know you can keyword in Bridge, but those things aren't quite as intuitive and quite as simple, I think, just, you know, from personal practice or personal use of it. So that's why Lightroom works for me. And once I've got into this concept of importing those images into my system and how all that works, then it's fine. But of course, I do understand, and I think some PhotoBuzzers have had this issue itself, is because you're actually then creating catalog files which need to be stored somewhere, and if you then, for some reason, if you store them on one external hard drive and then that hard drive goes or hasn't got attached, or it's, you know, whatever the situation might be, you then can't actually access those images without re-importing or doing, you know, messing about, basically.
Those are the only downsides. I mean, Lightroom's great. It's a great workflow solution, but it is that. And that's the bit, it's that fussiness about using it that's all I don't like. But I understand it's down to preference. If you get used to a particular way of working, Lightroom's great. But you've got to clean up your catalogs. You've got to, you know, delete from the back the older ones. It won't automatically get rid of them. So if you're not careful, before you know where you are, you'll have taken over your entire hard drive with Lightroom catalogs.
Yes.
So you have to manage the management system with Lightroom, whereas with Bridge, it's just telling you what's there, and you don't have to do any of that stuff. So I prefer that, probably because I guess I'm lazier and less organized than a dedicated Lightroom user would have to be.
I mean, I think ultimately the honest answer to this is I don't think we can recommend one or the other. Now this is the royal we, okay, so we have now gone to the PhotoBuzz thing, I think, and that is the fact that both will do a really good job for you. Both have their pros and their cons, so it's a question of trying both actually and deciding which one that you prefer. And if you've got the Adobe Photographer suite, you actually do have Bridge, and a lot of people don't even know they've got Bridge. I mean, that's one of the
it's built into Photoshop. In fact, I think it's in all the Creative Cloud packages, whether you're using, you know, Premiere for video editing or whatever, you'll have Bridge. It integrates and sort of goes across all of them. So, and of course, you know, Bridge works with Lightroom as well in to a degree.
Yeah, no, it does. Absolutely. So yeah, I mean, you know, either or, I've got a splinter right somewhere it hurts by saying either or. My preference is for Lightroom, John's preference is for Bridge. Both do the job, but you may, for those of you who don't want some of that, the slight complexity and the slight complications of importing and then catalog files and all the rest of it, then Bridge may be the better option. I'll concede that.
Bridge does throw you towards using Adobe Camera Raw instead of Lightroom, though. I think if you enjoy editing in Lightroom, then get used to the Lightroom file management process and learn how to deal with catalogs and where you put stuff. If you're not so worried about the Lightroom interface itself for editing your images, and you're happy to use those same controls in Adobe Camera Raw, which isn't as comprehensive, and you know, Camera Raw is a plugin, whereas Lightroom is a full software package. So Lightroom is a bit more comprehensive, but just about everything you'll find in Lightroom, you will find in Camera Raw, and you can use that in conjunction with Bridge to get pretty much the same thing. And for me, it's a simpler method of working.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair comment. I prefer the interface of the development module in Lightroom, but I can equally jump into Bridge and do 95% of what I can do in Lightroom in Bridge. So, you know, I genuinely use both.
So I hope that was conclusive for you as to what we recommend. It's kind of like, fill your boots, whatever you fancy, and we like both of them. So give you a conclusive result there. But I've got a question for you, Andrew, here. And it is, I read that spare camera batteries have to be carried in hand luggage and must have protective caps over the contacts. Why is this, and what do I do if I've lost those battery caps?
Yes, the battery caps that everybody loses. I mean, I don't think they even last a day, generally, do they?
Well, I've normally lost them before I've even opened the packet the battery came in. Yeah,
exactly. Well, look. First of all, I mean, this is a lot easier to answer than the last question, thank goodness. And that is that, yes, you do need to take some basic, simple precautions when you are traveling with your camera batteries. I would, this is what I do, and this is what I would suggest that everybody does. And that is, all batteries, camera batteries, are in my camera bag that I have in the cabin with me. That's, I believe, don't quote me on this, but I believe that is the requirement of the flying authorities.
The CAA or whoever.
That'll be somebody like that. Anyway, so, and there's a really good reason for that, is because they don't want something in hold luggage that could potentially catch fire and cause an issue. So it's for all our own safety. So, and also there's another reason you should have your batteries and your spare batteries with you actually in the cabin anyway. That's because I've lost count of how many times my old luggage hasn't turned up at the other end. I can manage for days in the wilderness without any spare pants, but I can't manage for days in the wilderness without my camera batteries. So it's a really important thing with that. Anyway, so I've got them with me in cabin. in my camera bag. I tape up the contacts with a little bit of electrical tape just to prevent any option or any chance of an accidental fire starting, however remote that might be. And again, I believe that is what you should be doing by the regulations.
Yeah, if you've lost the little plastic cap that goes over the top of the contacts, then don't worry about it. Just use some electrical tape. Tape up the two contacts, just cover it with a bit of tape, and then you can actually, you know, normally, depending on how your batteries fit, you can normally keep that attached somewhere, either stick it on the camera or on the bottom of the battery when you put it in, and you can keep that tape handy for the next time you take it out.
Yeah, or just carry a little roll of it with you. I mean, electric tape is like tiny, isn't it? So, and actually, the other thing I do is I stick each battery goes in a separate little freezer bag. It's probably, I don't really need to do that, but I just think as a little extra protection anyway for the spare batteries when not being used, when you're out and about, if it's in your camera bag, just in case you've left your camera bag open and you're photographing something, a sudden downpour of rain, you're not going to get stuff wet. I do the same thing with my my CF cards and SD cards. They're always a little freezer bag. Right, I know you can buy these, you know, expensive, I'm going cheapskate. John, you're normally the cheapskate here, but you know, instead of having a little plastic case for these things, I just put them in simple freezer bags, really.
Yeah, we shouldn't be encouraging too much use of plastic, but of course you can reuse these freezer bags, and they are brilliant within a camera kit.
Well, no, yeah, absolutely. Yes, 100% right, you know, but this isn't, I'm not taking out the battery or the CF card and then throwing the plastic away. I mean, I've probably got a couple of freezer bags that have been in my camera bag for a couple of years even. I mean, you know, they just go on and on and on. John.
Andrew.
Do you know what time it is?
Probably time. I've sort of got something to eat. I'm a bit peckish, actually. Is it that time? Is it lunchtime?
No, it's a time when normally you say what I'm saying now, and I say to you what you're saying to me now.
Right.
And that means it's time for Photovator.
Well, I've got something for you. We're at that time of year now where it can be a bit chilly overnight. And when it's chilly overnight, you get those wonderful frosty mornings. And there are loads and loads of opportunities that emerge in those early hours of the day that are worth getting up 10, 15 minutes earlier than normal for. I'll give you one example. And that is if you've got a regular routine in the morning, such as, you know, you get up, get in the car, drive off, then you probably have that period over the winter where you're switching the car and in the drive and letting the ice melt, or you're getting the scraper out. Give yourself an extra sort of 10, 15 minutes and take your camera out and look at those wonderful patterns in the frost on your windscreen. They are absolutely amazing. The swirls and curls of ice are truly fantastic. And to capture those, it doesn't take long to do it. You can even do it handheld if you want. But you can get some amazing textures. You get a wonderful blue coloration with it. It's really good. You can shoot from inside or outside, but get that frost on the windscreen.
Yeah, I think that's a really good idea. I just remember, I think it was Sandy Welsh, one of our photo buzzers, had a really cool picture from inside the car.
Yes,
using
I remember
frost.
That.
Yeah, yeah. Just, you know, so that, you know, the guys are already doing it, which is great. And I think I've seen pictures from Mary Gilbert as well, photographing frost pattern on the window forming outside. She lives in Scotland, so it's literally ice all
year
round.
That's frosty in the middle of summer,
yeah,
there.
Exactly. So that's absolutely fine. But, you know, it could be on a window pane. It could be anywhere. Just look for those patterns. Okay, yeah, something else on that score. Yes, I tell you the one thing I really like to do, and that is when they, you know, kind of this time of year, we tend to have a lawn, you know, we mowed it and then it got too wet to mow again, but it grew a little bit, so we've got a little bit of kind of grass growing up on it. When you get frost on the just single blades of lawn, and then you get the light coming through, early morning light coming through, backlighting it potentially,
yes.
And you get that really, you get some absolutely beautiful images.
That atmospheric icing, and you get that, and if you get that edge lighting as well from backlighting. If you haven't got the sun coming through, which is often the case, just use an LED light if you've got one of those, or a torch, anything, any light source, just out of frame. That can work really well too for those kind of shots.
Yeah, I mean, we recommended kind of the LED lighting for the fungi one that we suggested last month. Yeah, so yeah, absolutely.
Same kind of setup, really, totally. Isn't it? You're low to the ground, but yes, get a bit of backlighting is wonderful. Torch, LED light. It needs to be a direct light source though. So sun is obviously the best thing if you've got it, but it can be a lot easier to arrange sort of low sunlight hitting, or the effect of low sunlight hitting grass, particularly if you're in your back garden or something.
Yeah. You want to be, I mean, this is kind of a macro lens approach generally for that, isn't it? And again, lying on the ground. So you've also got your ground sheet from obviously your fungi stuff. It's unbelievable, the stuff you could last all year long.
That's it. A similar setup to shooting autumnal fungi in the woods, but but a darn sight colder, so you might want an extra pair of trousers on.
You might. And one of the other things I think is worth doing is if you've got a local pond or even a river where there's some kind of areas where you can walk and you've got gravel or pebbles in the margins where that water is shallower, that's going to freeze. And have a little walk around and have a look down and looking for little areas where you've got ice with patterns on it. Maybe you've got pebbles frozen underneath or even leaves frozen within it. There's all sorts of stuff, really interesting stuff to have. Basically, nature serves up this stuff, and all we've got to do is find it, looking down, shooting directly down, making sure the lens is parallel to the ground. You can get some really, really cool fine arty type stuff.
In general, if the weather forecast says it'll be a clear night anytime between kind of, mid-November and February, then that means there'll be an opportunity probably for frosty shots. And yeah, nature serves up wonderful, I suppose you could call them found still lifes in a way, and there's a plethora of those kind of opportunities early in the morning.
Get out there and do it. I know it's not easy in the middle of winter to get up, but I mean, John said 15 minutes earlier, I think you can lose yourself if you can find some really cool frost shots, so I'd give yourself a little bit longer.
Yeah, I was only thinking of the car windscreen thing there, but
we developed it. We developed it from there, so now you're out 2 hours early.
Don't go to bed.
Three.
Just don't go to bed at all. Stay up all night and shoot frosty stuff.
That's all we have time for in episode 10 of our Buzzcast. We've discussed tricky travelling with all your camera equipment. We've discussed whether Lightroom or Bridge is the best way to manage your files. We've also looked at how you should be carrying your spare batteries when you're travelling. And also we've given you a nice little tip to get out there and capture some really cool fine art frosty photos.
Lots to get stuck into. But remember, the Buzzcast isn't really just about what we're saying. It's about what you want to say as well. So do leave your comments below. You may have some additional tips or insight on any of the topics we've talked about, so please leave your comments.
So that's it for this episode, and it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.